On air, online and across Cambridge.
Your station.
Your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome to Burst the Bubble. No theme music this week, as the theme music has been eaten. And so in its place you get me saying, hello, and this is Burst the Bubble. And this is where the theme music would be. If you're curious, it sounds kind of like Michael saying, burst the bubble, but with loads of bubbles in the background. And also a sort of a whimsical song.
Is that music?
What, the theme song?
Yeah. Well, you said it's theme music.
Yes. Technically speaking, it's music. Yes, it's a sort of a jangly jingly instrumental song with the sound of bubbles popping, and with Michael going burst the bubble.
I'm thrilled.
That's how it ought to go.
Okay. Right. That's glorious. Thank you for that, Chris.
This serves as a good note on which to introduce my guest this week, Mr. John Nelson.
Hello. He found me. I was sort of hopping around outside Churchill, not falling into the water. And he said, "Seeing as
I said to myself that here's a man skilled in not falling into the water, and nothing would ruin the show like a man falling into the water midway through. So he's my guy.
That's true. And I so far haven't fallen into any water.
Yeah, so, that's good work.
But if you do hear any splash noises,
I have populated the studio with traps this week in order to test his ability. If he passes this test, then you know, just between you and me, he's the new Michael.
Right.
How do you feel about being the new Michael?
I'm not sure. I might find a trap first, just to avoid this. But you never know.
Do you think you have the skill set necessary to supplant him as a person?
I don't know. At the moment, I'm contorting myself into rather unusual positions whilst I try and look around for traps. So I apologise if you can't hear what's going on. I'm trying to stay close to the microphone. That wasn't a trap.
There we go. He's found one of them.
The trap was me, was the swivel chair, ironically, which apparently I cannot propel.
The traps are in your mind.
Oh, nuts. I hate this.
Okay. With such whimsy aside, let's do the show. What is this show, you might ask? Well, this is a show about whimsical news stories. This is sort of... Imagine, like, if Have I Got News For You or the News Quiz or something like that was being run in a country or maybe county where nothing ever happens. So, like, if it was Have I Got News For You, Yorkshire edition. You know, it's like, there's not very much to report on a day-to-day basis. You know, fairly unpopulated area, fairly boring existences. And so rather than stories about, you know, like, violent revolution and so on, you get stories about, you know, that bloke who tried to rob a bank, but then realised when he got in there that he hadn't brought a gun, but a cake. And slapped himself on the forehead and said, oh, this is silly, I'll come back tomorrow with actual weaponry. That's the sort of level of story we're talking about.
It's pretty much the same in Norfolk, as you point out. Like, for example, like, the great thing about local news is that it'll always take the local bent. I do remember, I don't remember because I wasn't alive, but when the Titanic sank, the EDP, which is our local newspaper, did manage to run a story with the headline, Norfolk Man Drowns at Sea.
Yeah.
And that is actually a good indication of how little happens in Norfolk. They can't see outside their little bubble.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Cambridge in that respect.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's like, yeah, the stories in the Cambridge News and Crier, which is invariably sort of youths anger person. And there'll be a quote from an angered person saying, yes, there were some youths, and they were saying things and singing songs and being joyful, and I hate joy.
Yep.
We should move on to our first real story, I think. Let's talk about our first real story of the week.
So what's our first real story, Chris?
Our first real story of the week is that a man in the United States has tried to sabotage a pizzeria using a sack of mice. A sack of mice. His precise strategy was to sneak into a pizzeria with which he was engaged in some sort of battle. The precise nature of the battle is not specified.
A mouse battle,
yes. And hide a sack of mice in the ceiling space.
Was he basically just hoping that, like, Ratatouille would happen in real life if he did this?
Quite possibly. Although I think Ratatouille would be good for his rivals, wouldn't it?
It's true, but you never know. I mean, it could be some kind of cunning double bluff where, in fact, he was the owner. Like Scooby-Doo, you know, it's always the owner of the theme park. I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for those pesky mice running around. That was my plan.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a very good villain.
Because if Ratatouille actually happened, he'd be in all sorts of trouble. Because the mice would pair themselves up with the stupider employees of his rival business. And then control them.
So you'd be a bit unfair on the mice, really, aren't you?
But unfair... Well, hang on, what? Unfair on the mice?
You know...
Explain yourself, man.
Do I have to? Well, that's sort of, you know, you're saying that they can have to go with the stupider ones, and they can't be with the they can't manipulate the cleverer ones. You know, mice are very clever. If you've not seen Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, this is a clear message to our times that you should never trust mice.
Okay, yes, I was incorrectly assuming that the clever employees of his rival would be able to conduct their own business using their advanced human brain without the need for a mouse controlling them from beneath their comically large chef's hat.
That's why the chef's hat is so large, though. To fit the mouse inside.
To permit the mouse, yes.
Yeah.
Or possibly some, like, because a chef's hat could admit more than a mouse.
It could.
That might suggest there are chefs out there. Yeah, a squirrel, or like a badger.
A badger? I don't think I want a badger on top of my head.
A chef being controlled by a badger.
A squirrel, I could probably deal with a squirrel, but a badger, a badger's likely to just claw me in the face, you know, at inopportune moments. When I'm trying to, like, griddle some steak or something, they're going nicely, claw in the face.
Yeah. That's actually why chefs are so angry. You know how Gordon Ramsay's always so pissed off?
That's true.
That's because there's a badger in his hat.
But he has abandoned the chef's hat quite a while ago, so a little badger in his back, I don't know.
It's like the badger is within.
The badger within?
Yeah, you know,
that,
like,
definitely sounds like a Metallica song. Yeah.
You know, like in Dumbo, like, you know, it wasn't the magic feather, he could really fly. And it's like Gordon Ramsay, it wasn't the badger on his head, he just really is that nasty.
Oh, right. I think we've seen I think we've uncovered the secret to Gordon Ramsay.
I think we have.
Yeah. This should be news. This is
real news. Yeah, we're not talking about the news. We're making the news.
Yeah. See, this is what you really tune into the show for—to hear the news here first.
Yeah.
As we make it.
Semi-libelous allegations about Gordon Ramsay. Bong.
Woohoo.
That was supposed to be like the ITV News at 10 bong. By the way, there was a bong involved.
All right, I'm glad you clarified that, because to be honest, I was quite confused. I thought it might be another trap.
I can libel the guy by suggesting that he's got a badger on his head, but you know, I'm not going into the bong territory. No. Maybe the badger had a bong. That would be okay. That's ridiculous enough to be false.
I don't know. Is it? You obviously haven't been wandering around Norfolk Woodlands late at night. You get all these stone badgers wandering around. You know, they're sort of, it's just the last thing you know, because they're all, you know, because they're black and white. You just see these little bits of white, and you think, is that a mouse? Is that a mouse? It's lots of mice together. It's lots of mice. Oh no, it's a stone badger. and then they kneecap you. It's a big problem in Norfolk. It would make the news every day, apart from it happens all the time.
This is what's holding the Norfolk economy back.
We have an economy? Oh, right, yes. That would probably be it.
He has been assaulted
kneecapping
by stone
Norfolk
badgers.
Badgers. Badgers kneecapping bankers.
Yeah.
That sounds like a Sun headline.
That does, yes.
That's more news. More news for you.
Okay.
Badger-related news. I think we should have a Badger News paper. All about, like, badger news.
You mean one distributed for badgers? As in, like, what the badgers read?
Yeah.
During the times when they're not kneecapping bankers, they've got to do something.
Yeah. They've got to hear about their comrades in badgerdom,
right.
Kneecapping bankers.
Otherwise, how would they coordinate the movement?
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
in fact, I don't know how they do it already. I think badgers, we underestimate badgers. We've been talking about mice, but I think we underestimate badgers quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're tricky little devils. Or big devils. They're actually quite large. Much bigger than mice.
So reeling matters in briefly to the relatively sane topic of mouse-related sabotage.
This is not a relatively sane topic. Relative
to badgers assaulting bankers, then I think the mouse sabotage is relatively sane.
Is there a badger in here? Is that one of the traps?
Not that I've planned, but I wouldn't put it past them.
Okay. Thanks for the warning.
Keep your eyes peeled. Just as a general principle, whether or not I've threatened you with some sort of studio bound trap.
Studio badger. I'll get the mashed potato, I'll be fine.
Oh dear.
Sorry, yes. Mice sabotaging restaurants.
Yes, really. Well, no, well yes, a comparatively mundane development.
So how do they find out?
Right. So apparently, the guy who ran the business was cleaning out the gents, and went in there and found a pair of footprints on the toilet seat, and said to himself, "Hang on a minute here, that's not the conventional way to use a lavatory." And also, one of the ceiling tiles has been moved. And his first thought, quite reasonably enough, was that somebody had, like, you know, hidden a kilo of coke in his roof or something like that. And, you know, somebody was going to come and retrieve it. You know, he was being used as, like, a dead drop. Or, you know, on, like, maybe the Russian mafia were, like, sneaking stuff out of the country. You know, that kind of thing.
So, should I clarify that the footprints were human footprints, not mouse footprints? Because if they were mouse footprints, it would be a bit of a giveaway what was going on, really.
You wouldn't
think it's Mr. Tumnus come in with, oh no, that's goat. Well, you know, a mouse Tumnus. Mouse-ness. Like, Tum Mouse.
Something that is to, like, the squirrel as Mr. Tumnus is to the human.
Yeah. But to a mouse.
Yeah. Not Mr. Tumnouse or Tum... Tum and the mouse.
Tum mouse.
But human footprints, which revealed that a sack had been hidden in his ceiling containing a bag of mice. The cunning plan, of course, being that they would come out and eat all the cheese. And if you do this to a pizzeria, then you know, there'll be like a comedy Italian stereotype the next morning going, hey, the mice, they eat my cheese. I must close the pizzeria.
I presume the bag was open, or that he didn't just put a closed bag of mice in and think these mice, they're clever enough, they'll work their way out. Or was it one of those sort of string bags? Because mice can chew through string.
Yeah, this is true. Yep.
So you do that, and it's sort of a bit like tying them up in Rabsy Nesbitt's vest, and just sort of putting it in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So you probably just assumed it was Glaswegians on that basis.
Oh, that would be excellent sabotage if you hid like three angry Glaswegians in the roof space.
It would ruin your pizzeria.
Restaurant reviews that are like, well, as much as I liked the pizza, there was just incomprehensible Scottish swearing emanating from parts unknown throughout the meal, and I was just discomforted by the whole experience.
It would probably work better. It probably would work less well in Glasgow, admittedly, because you know then it would just be three angry men. Basically.
Yeah, you could actually just move the Glaswegians into the room above the pizzeria, that would avoid your having to manhandle them into the roof space, which is difficult. I don't know if you've ever tried to like manhandle a Glaswegian into an attic against his will.
Not into an attic, no.
Let me tell you, it's not an easy thing to do. I recommend against it.
Okay, I'll bear that in mind, just in case I ever come across angry Glaswegians and an attic, and I have some bizarre temptation.
Yeah. That's the lesson of the week, boys and girls.
Don't manhandle angry Glaswegians into an attic. Oh, and beware of badgers. I think that's more important.
See, now, here's the thing. We're only 10 minutes into the show, and I'm already uttering the phrase on a relatively sane topic twice.
Right.
For the second time today. On a relatively sane topic, John.
Yep.
Our next story is about UFOs.
Relatively sane.
Aliens.
Relatively sane.
Relatively sane.
Relatively sane.
Okay. So what's happened is the Ministry of Defence has been declassifying the classified documents as they do on a sort of regular basis. Like if it's been classified for 30 years, if there's no particularly good reason, they just kind of chuck it out there.
Yeah.
And they've been declassifying the documentation about UFO sightings, except for it's all gone. And no, it's not just gone, but there was like a big gap on the bookshelf where there ought to have been all the UFO documents. There was just like a big hole that's sort of like there should be something here.
We know who it is.
Go on, who is it?
Badgers. You thought I was going to say aliens, didn't you?
I thought you were going to say aliens, yeah.
Yeah, I see.
Could be alien badgers.
Alien badgers.
I mean, like, obviously badgers are badgers are probably a terrestrial creature.
I'm actually having a slight panic attack now at the thought of alien badgers. excuse me a moment.
So let's make the relatively conservative assumption for the moment that it was aliens.
Right, sorry about that.
But clearly it wasn't aliens, right? Because if you're an alien, then you basically, the best way to keep everybody thinking you don't exist is to make sure that there's as many UFO nut jobs as possible.
Possibly. But maybe these were all the things saying nothing happened. There must be like, you know, they must have like keep yearly reports or something like of all the stuff, and they say 1980, nothing happened.
Yeah.
1981. Nut job. 1982, nothing happened.
Yeah, okay. So the complete historical record now is like, you know, 1932, this one guy got eaten by an alien, and then for 50 years we've lost the records, then in like 1986, then another guy got eaten, you know, and so it's like, track record. Two eatings, and then lots of years we couldn't possibly know anything about, and so there was probably eatings.
How do you actually get the evidence that somebody was eaten by an alien? I mean, do you witness somebody? Because then that's sort of going a bit further than just I saw an alien. It's like I saw an alien eating Fred. and that's why Fred's gone. And then you probably just think, actually, you murdered Fred, and are using a really poor excuse to try and get over this fact that you have murdered Fred.
It would be quite hard to do. You'd probably have to do something really obscure, like killing with a microwave. So, he's been shot with a ray gun.
Yeah. Although it's quite hard to fit people into microwaves, especially in the 1930s, when they didn't exist.
Yeah, you would have to have, like, a human-sized one. I think that makes you officially a Bond villain.
Yeah.
If you have a human-sized microwave on hand. Like, the only viable thing you can do with that is go, and now, Mr. Bond, I think it is time to cook.
Yeah, don't become a Bond villain. But, you're right. I mean, like, if you have a human-sized microwave, then there's only one reason you'd have a human-sized microwave, especially if it has, like, you know, little buttons, like, you know, it says roast chicken, you know, and sort of pizza.
Yeah.
Roast human.
And you've got another one for, like, MI6 agent.
Yeah, is that MI6 agent?
They have a note.
Pesky kids.
Yeah, feeble underling.
Yeah. Number two. Although number two could be misconstrued, so...
Let's not go down that route.
Okay, good idea. So there's no UFOs. Is it possible that there just weren't any UFO things? I mean, as I said, like, you know, just nothing happened, so they didn't have any UFO places.
So there were definitely reputable people who remember there being UFO reports, if you see what I mean.
Like, right. They just put them in a big vault, like, in a big vault for 30 years and didn't come back to them.
Yeah,
is that about right?
That's pretty much it. Yeah, because most of the time nobody cares. You know, you write down the report that says Jim said he saw an alien, and we hit him and said you're a stupid idiot, and Jim was very sorry. You know, that's pretty much the text to these reports, and then you leave it there. In some of the more well documented cases, there's some fairly systematic insanity. So it's, you know, it's more like, you know, we sent a team of guys armed with fish, and they hit everybody concerned with a fish simultaneously, and so they're all stupid idiots.
That I think you'll find is Monty Python. that is not actually something that actually happened, Chris. I'm sorry to do down on your memories like this.
Yeah.
But in fact, you have been watching surreal comedy.
Because that's the real conspiracy.
Well, they're Monty Python.
Yeah. They're hiding...
hiding aliens.
They're not aliens, they're actually Monty Python.
Yeah, that's just Monty Python.
Yeah, because, I mean, what have they been doing since the last film, eh?
That's true.
I don't know, you don't know.
No, I don't. You're quite right. They've been stealing UFO reports.
Right.
And being aliens.
Exactly.
Yeah. Those are perfectly plausible. They're much, much better than alien badgers. even the thought of it still bringing out a cold sweat.
Okay, so I think what we've learned from part one of the show is beware of badgers. Don't be a banker in Norfolk. And there aren't any UFOs, but there is Monty Python. We're going to take a quick musical break, but we'll be back talking about more ridiculous news just after this. I almost forgot there. If during the break you want to recommend something more sensible we can talk about, then you should send us an email.
Please do.
You can send us an email on studio@camfm.co.uk and or go to the website www.camfm.co.uk and contact us using the form that is there for that purpose. We'll be back after this.
On air and online.
For students across Cambridge.
Your station.
Your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst the Bubble, the show about whimsical news stories with me, Chris Moten.
And me, John Nelson.
Our guest for this week, our Michael replacement.
Yes, I am not Michael.
He is not Michael. Notice. Let's just be absolutely clear on that.
I am very clear on the fact that I'm not Michael. Thank you.
You got over that identity crisis?
Yeah.
Good.
I did. This was sometime last week.
Good work.
Thank you.
Is it possible it's you I've been doing the show next to, of course, if you had the crisis until this time last week?
I kept trying to get in, but nobody would let me in. I had to hop around. So that's why I've been practicing the hopping around the front of church, obviously.
Yeah.
You know.
Just sitting there waiting to watch Michael coming by and, cosh him, hide him in the bush, and then be him for an hour.
Yeah, I think you misunderstand. I mean, like, I thought I was Michael. I didn't see the need to cosh Michael, because then...
Oh, that, of course, you know, yes, that would be weird.
Yeah, that would be
that
like...
That would be like, yeah. Nothing would be more fundamentally upsetting to you than seeing Michael.
It would basically be like smashing a mirror, and that's 7 years bad luck.
Yeah.
You know, if you cosh your own doppelganger.
Lesson number four of the show, kids. Don't cosh your doppelganger.
If you see him, shake him by the hand. 7 years good luck. If you're at a mirror, don't try and shake yourself by the hand, because then you get sore fingers.
You're just, yeah, you're just, you know, it'll be mildly unpleasant.
It will be mildly unpleasant. Actually, that's probably the worst that's going to happen.
Of all the things you could do to yourself in a mirror, that's one of the less bad ones.
Let's not go down that route.
let's not go down that route. Whatever that route might have been, and nobody will ever know.
Yes.
I will metaphorically cosh that route and hide that in the bushes.
Yes, because that route does not look like you. Doesn't look like you at all, Chris. It's just not you. That route's not you, Chris.
Okay, so for the third time this show, on a more sane matter, during the previous musical break, we had an email. From CJ, who says, if you're an alien stealing alien sighting documents, wouldn't you just create another alien sighting in the process of the theft? And this is correct if the aliens are rubbish at thievery.
Yeah.
So what we can establish, because, you know, if the aliens are any good at theft, then they could get in, nick the documents, get out.
Yeah.
So what we've learned here is either there aren't aliens, or there are aliens, but they are ninja-like in their ability to nick stuff.
Yep. And they have a penchant for their own sightings, nicking that.
Oh, yeah, go on, yeah. I mean, it's not a very good cover-up.
No.
They presumably think that humans are very sort of legalistic, in the sense that that there would be an exchange of, like, but I remember there being an alien sighting. And then person B would say, well, if you did remember an alien sighting, wouldn't there be a document here saying that you did? And then person A will say, oh, yes, you're quite right, there's no documentation. I must be going mad.
In fairness, given we've established that the people who say they've seen aliens sort of get hit around the head by fish, by MI5...
That would explain their state of mind.
Yes, exactly. They're probably going to be quite confused about a lot of things.
It's a self-perpetuating sort of cycle.
Yeah.
They're kept insane by MI5 suppression techniques.
Yeah. On a more relatively sane note...
Fourth time this week. Let's talk about some more news stories. Our first story of this segment hails from New Zealand.
Oh, and, land of the...
Or the free. Ukraine.
And or the Ukraine.
Yep.
They're very close.
They are in this particular matter. What's happened here is Rock FM, a New Zealand-based radio station, has held a competition which they entitled Winner Ukrainian Wife.
Ah, one of those.
It's like, not many radio stations on their day-to-day business think to themselves, you know what's great? Human trafficking. If only we could get in on that. You know, there's clearly a market there. We're missing out on this.
Oh, hold on. Oh, there goes the last segment.
Wait, what?
I thought that's what was happening in the last segment. We were doing win a wife who's not a badger.
Win a non-bad... Yes. Yes, and by that I mean no, and by that I mean shut up.
Right.
Moving swiftly on.
Duly noted.
Moving swiftly on. The story is not quite as scary as it sounds. What it actually is the radio station lets you... I think they let you win a 12-day holiday in Ukraine. And then they also set you up with somebody on a dating website. By which I mean they find somebody who's already on the dating website, sort of looking for randomness from New Zealand. And then set you up, like, they, you know, fund you to go for a nice dinner with them or something like that.
Right. That doesn't sound anywhere near so bad. So, you're winning a Ukrainian wife. That sort of human trafficking thing.
No, indeed, yes. It's, they called it winning a Ukrainian wife because presumably because they wanted to be implicated for serious crimes they hadn't committed.
You see.
It's an interesting promotional line. You know, what they've basically done is gone, think of this terrible, terrible thing, and then get something that's actually fairly mild and legal, and then bring you close-ish to the kind of thing they're talking about. Like, it's like equivalently, ChemFM might, but I should explicitly say, won't hold a competition entitled Win a Kilo of Cocaine, in which what they promise to do actually is move you to a country where there is known to be cocaine and then pay for you to, like, live in a hotel for 7 days and then sort of, like, you know, studiously ignore whatever's in your luggage.
But could you not get done by, you know, Trade Descriptions Act if you say win a Ukrainian wife and you go to Ukraine and you get set up with a Ukrainian woman and then she doesn't like you? And right, then you don't get a Ukrainian wife. And they
no,
go,
indeed, yes.
What, you know, what's going on here?
What you've got there is Ukrainian loathing.
Yeah, Ukrainian loathing.
And when Ukrainian loathing is a terrible...
Fear and loathing in Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah.
If you will. But only if she's quite scary. Otherwise, it's just loading.
Yeah. The fear probably stems from, like, the terrible crimes you've implicated yourself with by participating in this competition.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough, yeah. I'd be quite afraid, I think.
Yes. I'm not sure what conclusion we should draw from this competition, except for just oh God, oh God.
Don't listen to New Zealand radio, I think, especially the conclusion.
Don't listen to Rock FM, and it is a dubious, at best, promotional strategy to go, you know what's great? Terrible, terrible crimes.
Yeah. But moving swiftly on.
Moving on to something which is only a slightly terrible, terrible crime, that being the sort of quasi-theme for this segment of the show. A Hindu festival in Nepal has been banned from selling cannabis.
I see.
As it turns out that it was traditional at this festival.
Oh, so it's not like Glastonbury.
It's definitely traditional at Glastonbury, but at this festival in particular, it was traditional to smoke cannabis, and it was sold there by people, holy men referred to as sadhus, S-A-D-H-U.
Sadhus.
Is that really true?
I have no idea.
Okay. it was sold by these people as part of the tradition, but it's finally been banned because, well, presumably what they'd noted is that people who wanted it for other reasons would turn up to the festival and go, oh yes, religious observance, 25 kilograms, please. But the thing I like the most about this is that apparently the reason why it was traditional to smoke cannabis at this location was because the Hindu god Shiva was said to have enjoyed it.
Now, Shiva, the god of destruction.
Shiva is the god of destruction.
Right, yes.
I posit that he was not getting very much destroying done.
Either that, or normally he was quite mild-mannered until he sort of got onto the cannabis and went briefly flailing around and destroyed everything.
Yeah.
And then sort of wake up, because apparently cannabis makes you pass out. He would wake up after he'd bizarrely passed out and would look around and go, oh nuts, I've done it again.
So the great cycle of the universe in Hindu religion occurs because Shiva occasionally goes a bit crazy and then wakes up and goes, oh my, oh yep. Dear, could we move back to creating and pretend this never happened?
And maintaining. Can we please try and maintain this better next time? The maintainer is definitely the most rubbish job of all the gods, isn't it? Creating, quite fun, you know, quite satisfying. Destroying, that's quite fun, if you're that way inclined.
Yeah.
Don't do it, kids.
So the maintainer's main job is probably hiding Shiva's stash.
Yeah, and hoeing occasionally, probably.
The main sign of the end of the universe is that Shiva has found the stash. That's like earthquakes, so when he's like searching for the stash.
Yep, at the moment he's just trying to get enough money together to buy a bit more.
Right, exactly. See, I was thinking, you see, of the other stereotype about people who smoke cannabis, which is to say that they were very placid, and therefore that the ceremonial smoking might be kind of like we're keeping Shiva supplied. That, like, he's ordinarily violent,
but
just can't be bothered with the violence. So you have to keep his stash topped up.
Yeah, no, that would make more sense.
You'd have to, like, burn it as an offering.
So the thing is, now they've banned it, if we notice that suddenly lots of things are spontaneously combusting
lots of tornadoes and earthquakes
around Kathmandu,
that's probably because we're not appeasing Shiva enough.
Yeah, indeed. And as long as he's not spontaneously combusting all the cannabis, then we can probably still do this all right.
Yeah, get back on it, guys.
We didn't just advocate drug use.
We did not, but we did advocate the not end of the world.
Yes.
I feel pretty confident in my non-world-ending views.
Yes. I think that's probably a good thing to be advocating, not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so finally, to cap off the illegal activity-based section, a very brief story coming from Bedford, in which two people who were growing the same substance successfully used slapstick comedy in order to keep the police out of their abode where they were growing it.
Messrs. Laurel and Hardy. And how exactly did they do this?
What they basically did is they put a big they put like a 2-litre bottle of water and propped it on top of the door.
Right.
So that the police would walk in and it would go clunk and, you know, cover them in water, and they'd go, "Ooh."
Now I'm all damp. I cannot do my duty. I will go now.
Yes.
I think if I was a policeman and I walked through and had 2 litres of water deposited on me, I wouldn't think I've just walked into an innocent family household. I shall go now.
Presumably they'd think they're clearly like filming a Benny Hill sketch here. I should get out of here just like because there's going to be banana skins on the floor, carelessly discarded skateboards, you know.
And worst thing of all, the custard pie in the face.
I've seen these films. This is a line not worth pursuing.
Right.
Speaking of not worth pursuing, let's take another brief musical break.
Wait.
If you want to email us about any of those stories, or about other better stories that we should have been discussing, then you can email us on studio@camfm.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us by going to www.camfm and using the web form that is there for that purpose. We're going to take a musically appropriate break. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Your city.
Your station.
Your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst the Bubble. That was Spanish Casual Magic by Jimi Hendrix, and the one I forgot to describe earlier was Grounds for Divorce by Elbow. I'm here with my guest this week, John Nelson, talking about silly news stories. But during that little break, we had a few emails from people talking about the stories in the previous segment. CJ says that the worst possible thing you could do to a mirror, believing that mirror to be somebody which is not you, is a striptease, which you periodically throw dollar bills at it. I think we can all agree about that, especially because that's not normally how stripteases work. You'd have to be in some sort of striptease, you know, like a sort of a professional meeting location, like a striptease conference, where you can meet with other striptease artists and sort of, you know, compare notes.
Compare notes. Hey!
Hey! We also had another slightly less scary email from an anonymous source, but whose IP address we'll be reverse resolving during the next break in order to find and exact our retribution. They say that I wouldn't like to find badgers living in my restaurant. It would be upsetting.
That's set as in the badger set.
That is set as in the badger set.
As opposed to just upsetting, which is also true.
It works better when you can see it written down on paper.
Yes.
Anyway.
We apologise for butchering that joke.
a belated budum tish, I feel. Anyway.
Budum.
Let's move on with this segment of the show. First of all, John, I believe you have a story for us.
Yes, well, it's not so much a story, but it is something that I read in the news earlier. So you may have been aware, those of you who have been keeping up with the entertainment, is that Charlie Sheen, him of 2 and a Half Men, has gone a little bit mad and has created a lot of bizarre interviews where he said very bizarre things. Now, there is another prominent figure, world figure, who has also been saying very bizarre things, and as a result, the Guardian website decided to have a Can You Tell the Difference Between Charlie Sheen and Colonel Gaddafi? By giving a selection of each of their quotes and seeing which one was which. So, Chris, I've got a couple that I can remember.
Okay.
Let's see if you know.
So, just to be clear, I've got to guess whether this quote originated from Charlie Sheen or Colonel Gaddafi.
So one of them was, your face will melt and your kids will weep over your exploded body.
That's pretty awful. I'm going to say that was Charlie Sheen.
It was actually Charlie
was
Sheen.
Charlie Sheen, yes.
He was talking about himself as a drug and what would happen if you took him. don't do it, kids.
Don't do Charlie Sheen.
Don't do drugs, especially if they happen to be Charlie Sheen.
If you ever see like a suspicious guy wearing an anorak in the street saying, "Hey, you want some Charlie Sheen?" Even if that isn't Charlie Sheen, say no.
But one more that I can remember is I am like the Queen of England.
I think that was Gaddafi.
That was Gaddafi, because Charlie Sheen is nothing like the Queen of England. So it's clearly Gaddafi.
Yeah. Colonel Gaddafi is obviously quite a lot like the Queen of England, you know, in the sense...
Wait, he is? Hang on, what are you insinuating here? That must be libel.
I'm interested to know on what grounds... Which one am I insulting? I'm interested to know on what grounds he drew the similarity between himself and the Queen. You know, this like this monarch who sort of
at the time he was wearing a tiara.
So what does the Queen do? You know, the Queen sits there sort of nominally having power, not really having power. Okay, so we might be getting somewhere there.
Okay, right.
She also spends a lot of her time opening shopping centres.
Yep, I hear Gaddafi does that. Does he also have his head on money? So you can have Tails and Gaddafi.
That would be a great panel show game.
You want Tails and Gaddafi?
Tails or Gaddafi.
Tails or Gaddafi.
You're presented with a series of sketches and you have to identify whether that's Tail or Colonel Kennedy.
I think we should work on this, but not now.
Okay, so what we've established is, number one, that Gaddafi is not like the Queen of England. And number two...
No, Charlie Sheen is not like the Queen of
England. Charlie Sheen is not like the Queen of England. And number two, I'm pretty decent at identifying the Charlie Sheen stroke Colonel Gaddafi dichotomy.
Yes, well done. If you want to see more, then just look on the Guardian website for Charlie Sheen and Gaddafi. And that will probably be the only thing that comes up. Yeah. I kind of hope it's the only thing that comes up.
And I'll be spending the next week volunteering, identifying, serving as a Charlie Sheen identifier, so as to help the kids avoid doing Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
I'll sort of walk around the neighbourhood going, Charlie Sheen? Not Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen? Not Charlie Sheen. Of course, we haven't established that ability. We've established I can tell Gaddafi from Charlie Sheen. Yeah. It's possible I'm a Gaddafi detector, and I could just walk around going, not Gaddafi? Not Gaddafi? Not Gaddafi? Not Gaddafi. What are you doing here? What are you doing?
I've been found out.
Hiding in the ball pit.
It's true.
Where I imagine Colonel Gaddafi would hide out is like in a ball pit at a shopping centre.
Yeah,
because it it's the last place you'd look. You know,
that is probably true.
If you phoned MI5 and said, "I've heard he's hiding in one of those ball pits, but I don't know which one," to be honest, it would be brilliant either way. Because if you managed to get it to work, you would have like MI5 agents storming into shopping centres, rummaging through ball pits. And there's only so long you can do that before recovering a sort of a childlike glee at what you're currently doing. And then you'll end up with like one of the MI5 agents sort of playing gleefully in the ball pit, sort of going, "Wee balls." Whilst the boss of the MI5 has to go around corralling the agents and sort of restoring them to mental normality. So, for the fifth time, on a more sane note...
Hang on, I thought that one was reasonably sane.
You thought that finding Colonel Gaddafi in a ball pit...
Well, he's got to be somewhere, hasn't he? Yeah. So what's more sane? Go on, tell us what is more sane than Colonel Gaddafi in a ball pit.
What is more sane than Colonel Gaddafi in a ball pit is, John, our two last segments for the two last stories for the show today. Story number one concerns the Kenyan MP Gideon Mabuvi, who is fighting for the right to wear bling in Parliament.
That is definitely more sane.
It's sane. It's not sensible, but it's sane.
Yeah. I was being sincere. Sorry, that was my sincere voice.
Oh, that was... Okay. I don't think I've ever heard your sincere voice.
Really? Oh, I'm nuts.
Yeah. You're dead at heart. Anyway, so the actual story is that basically this MP got tossed out of the chamber for wearing extras, by which he meant sunglasses and earrings.
Right.
Which, to clarify, he was also wearing a suit.
Okay, so it wasn't just like wandering in like sort of Kanye West or something.
Oh, I see. I was thinking more like if he wandered in naked, except for some sunglasses. And
oh, right. Yes, that would actually be worse.
That probably would get you thrown out of the chamber.
We've got to throw him out of the chamber anyway. And he was wearing a suit, which I gather is quite respectable.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least I gather that suit is respectable. I don't know about the suit in question. Mm. It could have been one of those sort of ghastly, like, purple and yellow things.
Yeah.
I say one of those like you see them all the time.
So given that the Kenyan Parliament's rules, like a lot of parliaments, are sort of basically just, you know, loosely copied from sort of established democracies when it was founded, I wonder whether, if the same rules apply in the British Parliament, could this be used as a sort of a political strategic move?
What, to wear bling?
No, to get your enemies thrown out of Parliament.
Make them wear bling?
Yeah, like plant bling.
But I'm fairly sure... I literally mean,
like, if you see Nick Clegg walking down the street, sort of rugby tackle him, and then whilst he's confused, get an earring in there. And then he'll be halfway through his big speech, and then he'll be, like, escorted from the chamber by bailiffs, who are like, "I'm sorry, sir, no bling in the chamber."
But didn't we establish from Ali G in the House that you are allowed to wear bling in the British Parliament?
In Parliament? Did he try that?
I don't remember.
Presumably from the spectators' gallery, like the public gallery. You know, like he didn't actually become elected for the purposes of the film. Awesome as that would have been.
Oh, hang on. Oh, yeah, sorry. That's fiction. Sorry. I get confused by these things. Sorry, yeah, okay. In which case, we can draw nothing from that film.
Yeah. Just in general. The works of Ali G are culturally valueless.
Culturally valueless.
Culturally... Oh, for good. Neither of us could say that.
Culturally? I can say culturally. I can also say culturally.
Culturally.
Which is, I think, what you're trying to say.
Is a what's a culture lily?
A culture lily.
Yeah.
It's like a little flower that lives on ponds and sings opera.
Is the opera genetically determined? Like if you clone one, does it sing the same opera? And if you crossbreed it with another one, do you get a hybrid opera?
I'm not an expert on cultured lilies. Why on earth would I be an extra expert on cultured lilies? That is the most bizarre thing you could have possibly come up with. Badgers kneecapping bankers, yeah, that's fine.
But lilies that sing operas and which can be selectively bred in order to produce hybrid operas.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Hybrid operas.
Hybrid operas, yeah.
I really like the idea of that. Just sort of like, you can create one opera, you get two operas together.
Yeah.
Or in fact, just a musical. You can get an opera, so you can get like Die Fledermaus and sort of put it in with ABBA, the musical. Mamma Mia.
You should never crossbreed those two, yes.
And just see what happens.
It displeases everybody when it suddenly breaks mid-song into a rendition of Take a Chance on Me.
In German, isn't it?
Give them chance upon, yeah.
I'm fairly sure that's not how it is in German. Unfortunately, I also do not speak German.
Chance sounds like chance, and give is definitely chance. Like take a chance, give me a chance. I don't know. What we learn here is that I should not write German opera.
Yes.
Specifically not German opera derived of Swedish pop music.
Yes. That is very much a lesson that we should all take away from this.
Oh dear.
Moving swiftly on.
And then we've a minute till the end of the show, so let's conclude it in a fairly appropriate manner with a final story which reveals that people with full bladders make better decisions.
Ah, that's convenient because I need the loo.
But you cannot go until I switch off the microphone, and the microphone switches over here.
It's the decision to go to the toilet. Because, you know, so if you don't have a full bladder, then going to the toilet is a bad decision, right? Because then you sort of, your bladder thinks you need less in order to pee. Whereas if you've got a full bladder and then you pee, that's a good decision.
Yeah, and if you don't need to, then there's really not a bad answer to that decision.
I like the way that they can get away with this as well by saying scientists discover in the headline. It's just like any time a scientist who's down the pub and is drinking and he says, I need a pee, but I won't go yet, you know, because it helps my thought process. They go, right, this scientist has said this thing about people with full bladders, therefore we're going to make this newsworthy and put a picture of some toilets.
Yeah. there is allegedly some actual, you know, thorough method going on here in which they basically took people who had or had not been compelled to drink 5 full glasses of water and got them to make decisions based around, I think it was trading off short for long-term benefit.
Right.
Which tells us, I suppose, that if you're absolutely dying to go, then you're also quite good at going, on a similar note as going, I shouldn't go here because, you know, like, the Archbishop of Canterbury is here and it would be really embarrassing. You know.
Is this why you get in the sort of, in the stock exchange, you get all these people hopping around, you know, sort of going, buy, because they actually really need the loot.
They're improving their decision-making.
They're improving their decision-making by having full bladders.
Yep.
And occasionally drinking pints of water.
That's pretty much what's going on.
Yeah, excellent.
Okay, we're more or less out of time, so I shall ask you to make using your power, your power of desperation, John. I shall ask you to make one good decision.
One good decision.
Yes. Should it be the end of the show?
Should it be the end of the show? I think maybe yes. Before I really do need to go to the toilet.
Excellent choice. Okay.
Yes.
With that, let us conclude the show. I have been Chris Moten. My guest has been John Nelson. He is about to explode, and this has been Burst the Bubble. We'll be back this time next week talking about more silly news stories. Goodbye.
Goodbye.